This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Joining us now to pick over the bones of yesterday's election in Illinois are two political scientists from Illinois State University, Carrie Melita and Tom McClure. They're with the Department of Politics and Government. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
What are your top takeaways from the voting? Carrie, let's start with you.
So this was a pretty textbook midterm election. We have this idea in political science called the surge and decline, which is that during presidential election years, the president's party has this sweep of down ballot victories or positive coattail effect, and then the president's party loses seats at midterm. And that's what we saw in this election. So I think it was a fairly textbook midterm election, as unexciting as that is to say.
And Tom?
I believe that this election has empowered the Senate even more so in terms of appointing judges and reshaping the judiciary. Now that the Senate is the only Republican branch, they're not going to have to worry about coming up with creative solutions for tough problems. Instead, they could focus on the judiciary, and that's going to be the legacy of President Trump.
And weren't they already going to do that?
They have a buffer now. There was a question when the Kavanaugh nomination came up whether there would be enough defectors to cause that nomination to fail. Now there's no question that whoever Trump puts up is going to be approved.
But why does that equate to the House control equate to a freeing of senators?
Because now there's not going to have to be any focus on trying to get legislation through both houses. Instead, the only thing the Senate's going to be able to accomplish, in my view, other than negotiating budgets from time to time, is going to be just a selection of judges.
So what will happen in Congress, Carrie?
I think, the President Trump did a press conference this morning where he spoke of reaching out to Democrats and working on common interests like an infrastructure bill, maybe even amenable immigration reform. So, I mean, it remains to be seen whether that was just an empty promise that was made. But that's fairly standard. The first press conference that President Obama did for his first midterm when his party, the Democrats, lost control of the House, just same thing that happened in this case. He made kind of a similar outreach rhetoric, which didn't pan out. But I guess we're just going to have to wait to see how that goes.
So you've already said that it's not a blue wave. Turnout up, but not startlingly. The Democratic Party pick up 29 House seats, about average for a midterm, losing three Senate seats when so many Democratic seats were up this year. That also not surprising. So why all the hype about a blue wave then?
I think it's exciting, right? It makes for a really good story, and it probably makes voters feel really good that, you know, that they made a difference, that those that turned out did make a difference. It's just that we had turnout of about 49%. I mean, it's a little higher than average for a midterm, but not historically so. And I think it just makes for a really good narrative moving forward.
So was it a case of all the hype created a small increase in turnout, or was there truly something different that failed to materialize?
I think the hype probably got voter turnout up. What was really disappointing was we're starting to look at the demographics that turned out to vote, and this was supposed to be the youth year, right, the youth vote. And it looks like about 13% of those under the age of 30 voted. So this, unfortunately, wasn't the youth vote, but it was other demographics kind of giving us a little bit of a bump in turnout for a midterm year.
What should Republicans and Democrats use as a takeaway for 2 years from now from this election, Tom?
Well, I think that the Democrats need to be realistic that some of the seats that they have captured were won by moderate Democrats as opposed to persons who are on the extreme left. So I think that they need to make sure that their message is something that appeals to the average voter as opposed to their base. The Republicans, on the other hand, I think that they are in a very difficult spot because a lot of them are fearful of going against the president because of how he could react to them. So I'm not quite sure where they can go. Some of them have difficulty supporting the agenda, and I think that those who do oppose the agenda are going to be the ones who are going to end up on the losing end.
Carrie, what's your advice to Democrats and Republicans?
Yeah, I think that working together on key issues like infrastructure might be a good way to move going forward. There is still a lot of ill will amongst the public for partisans and establishment and people that they perceive to be insiders. And the next election we face in 2020 will be a presidential election, which turnout tends to be a lot higher. When turnout is higher, you tend to have more moderates being swept into office because most Americans are moderate. When you have midterm elections where it's just kind of the partisans that show up, that's when you get the more ideologically extreme candidates being elected. So moving forward, just keeping in mind that 2020 will be an election where there are more moderates that are turning out to vote. So their records are going to need to reflect that.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. With us are Carrie Melita and Tom McClure of Illinois State University's Department of Politics and Government. One of the more pronounced artifacts of the election in Illinois is the continued divergence of the urban and rural votes. Why is that happening?
Well, historically, that's been where we've been for some time. I think what we've seen here is that the urban areas have consistently gone Democrat, but there's a shift that's taking place in downstate Illinois. I think we're becoming more and more Democrat.
Downstate's becoming more Democrat?
I think it's becoming more Democrat. I think you're seeing that in areas such as in north central Illinois, that typically was not voting as strongly Democrat as it was this last election. For instance, the suburbs this time, the suburbs were more favorable to Pritzker than they were to Rauner when he ran 4 years ago.
Is that an artifact of Rauner? Or is that a Trump effect? What is that? It's been going more blue in the Chicago suburbs for some election cycles, but did something accelerate it in particular this time?
You know, this is something that it's not unique to Illinois. This is a pattern that we're seeing nationwide. America is becoming a country of those that reside in urban areas and their associated suburbs and those that live in rural America. That's the big divide now. It's not a partisan thing. It's not a cultural thing. Or it simply is just culture. It's those that live in rural America versus urban America. And I think what we're seeing in Illinois is really just a sorting process of what's going on in basically all 50 states.
Should Democrats and Republicans be worried about that sort? Tom?
I think they just need to adapt. I think that I've got hope that at one point we're going to have a strong moderate voice again. I know it doesn't seem like it's realistic right now, but I think that most voters, the ones who decide the election, are in the middle. And I think if the parties are sensitive to that, it's going to reap results that are going to be favorable.
Will the national become writ small? I mean, we've already seen Nikita Richards, the Democratic county clerk candidate, lose big time in the rural area and come close to winning in the urban areas. Is that a bad sign for partisanship at the local government level?
I don't think it was a big surprise that McLean County continued to go Republican for a Republican incumbent. So as enthusiastic as Nikita Richards was as a candidate, I don't think that that's enough to undo that strong Republican culture in McLean County.
Carrie, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think Tom's right. I think that it's being mindful of the new urban-rural divide as Democrats and Republicans move forward. And that's going to entail representing different types of issues for Democrats and Republicans, which might pull the parties even further apart now that we're seeing this constituency sorting. So while it's difficult to imagine, I'm worried that this might actually polarize the parties further looking forward.
Is the urban-rural sort likely to create more difficulty in finding compromise? I mean, we did away with earmarks, so the horse trading that goes on in addressing, I have my issue, you have your issue, let's stick both of them in a bill together, that's a little more difficult to achieve now. Is it even more difficult when you have this sort of non-coincidence of interests?
Yeah, I think so. So it's not a matter of that Democrats and Republicans have different opinions on issues. It's that they're talking about different issues. They're not talking about the same types of policy preferences. And that's even harder to compromise on because one side doesn't even think that an issue should be on the table. So it definitely makes compromise trickier.
Tom?
I think that how divided the country is, both at the national and the state level, is such that it's going to make it very difficult for a divided government to get anything accomplished. I am optimistic that Illinois is going to be able to move forward now that there's not going to be that gridlock. But I just don't see that as long as there's a division that anything is going to be done.
Well, let's look at Illinois. The lack of gridlock also equates, at least in the present instance, to a supermajority by Democrats in the General Assembly. But solutions to Illinois' problems are going to require some unpleasant votes. Are they... the Democrats, do you think, going to be able to take those unpleasant votes?
Well, they're going to have to make some tough decisions, but it would not surprise me if there was an increase in taxes some way or another in order to deal with the outstanding debt problem of the state as well as the pension shortfall.
Kerry Melita, is there any way for the Democrats to attract any Republican votes at all on a matter that they don't need to participate in because they are so far in the minority?
Absolutely. And the same could be said for Republicans. If there's a really strong electoral incentive for either party to just make one or two steps back towards the middle, because that's still where most of the country is and where most of the country feels that both parties have left them behind. So any attempts at bipartisanship or working across the aisles, I think all the evidence suggests, will be greatly rewarded electorally.
Is there evidence of purpling of America that isn't reflected in who's getting elected?
Absolutely. And one of the best ways to look at this is the ballot measures that took place at the state level across about 20 different states, where you have what we think of as very conservative states, like Utah, for instance, legalizing recreational marijuana or medicinal marijuana, and states like Michigan, a fairly middle of the road Midwestern state, legalizing it recreationally. And the big thing behind this is that when we look at election results, all we see is the red state or the blue state, but we don't see the nuanced purple in the middle, which is still the norm in America. That's what we are. We're not, people aren't as polarized as the parties are.
What are some more of those ballot initiatives that indicate an unexpected middle?
Well, so in the state of Florida, my home state, we had a Republican win the governorship, pretty comfortable close margin, but then we also had a ballot measure that passed handedly by well over 60% to restore voting rights to ex-felons. Florida had one of the more restrictive laws on the books, which basically said that if you had ever been convicted of a felony, your voting rights were permanently stripped as long as you lived in that state, and that was done away with through a ballot measure. So in states where you had red walls, you still had progressive ballot measures being handedly adopted by the electorate, which just, I think, really suggests it's not that people are more polarized, it's that the choices that we're being given are more polarized in terms of candidates.
Tom, any observation?
I really don't have anything further to add.
This is Sound Ideas. Kerry Melita and Tom McClure are political scientists at Illinois State University. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis and Darren LaHood will now be in the minority. Davis has worked as a staffer in the minority, but this would be his first time as an elected representative in the minority. And, of course, LaHood has not been there that long. How do you think they're going to adjust, Tom?
I don't think you're going to see any changes in the way that Darren LaHood operates his office. He's in a safe, conservative district. He had a very good margin of victory. So I think he's going to be able to just conduct business as usual. Rodney Davis, on the other hand, just barely eked by this election cycle. I think that you're going to see the way that he functions is going to be a little bit different, and that you're going to see more times that he may be against the president in his votes. just so that he could show that he is more of a moderate as opposed to a hardline conservative.
Yeah, his opponent mentioned that his voting record is about 97% with Trump, even though he has some bipartisanship that he points to. So what would a meaningful divergence from the Trump litmus test be?
Well, it perhaps is going to be on the area of immigration. I'm just trying to think of what could realistically get there, or infrastructure. I mean, if there's, and this is maybe pork barrel politics, but if there's an infrastructure bill and he can bring home the bacon to central Illinois, it would be a way he could support the president, support the district, and he could present himself as someone who is doing something that's consistent with the will of the voters. On the other hand, I could see that he could oppose the president on immigration.
So is there a loss of clout to central Illinois because of the new minority status of LaHood and Davis? Is the ability to participate in the fruits of an infrastructure bill or of an immigration bill less for this area now?
I don't know that it really made that much difference. I think the only place that you're really going to see differences in clout would be at the congressional level, at the committee level, but not necessarily for the president. I'm thinking that the president right now looks to the representatives when he makes appointments in the state of Illinois, and I think that he will continue to do so. So I don't think that from that point of view, Davis or LaHood have any less clout than they did before.
There's an old saying that voters tend not to like political neophytes in top jobs. They want somebody with experience, or at least they behave that way, even though they say they don't. We do now have two consecutive Illinois governors who contradict that conventional wisdom, who are, you know, new to political office right at the top. Do we distinguish that by saying, oh, millionaire, billionaire, or is something else going on here?
We don't like, you know, neophytes and top jobs, but what we also don't like even more right now are political insiders and people that we perceive as members of the long-term political establishment. That's very much a trend in many states right now that we're seeing where we like to have kind of these outsider businessmen come in. The idea, I mean, that was our president that we elected, that can come in and shake up politics as usual. It's this idea that those that lack the political experience might be able to do something in the lines of disrupting the establishment.
And 2 years ago, pollsters got it way wrong. How about this time? Carrie Melita?
Our models are back very accurately. This was about as textbook as we could get. Democrats took the House, and that's about what we expected them to do. So not a blue wave, but not a red wave either.
So what's the guarantee, if there is such a thing, that the models will remain accurate and not be subject to yet another curveball?
I think that 2016 was the hiccup. I mean, you know, models, you know, we always have margin of error in our predictive modeling, and I think 2016 was just the blip. But by and large, it looks like our models are going to be accurate moving forward.
And Tom McClure, very quickly, any final observations about the midterm?
In terms of the midterm, there were really no surprises. And I think that what we're going to see is that we've now started the presidential campaign today.
Tom McClure and Carrie Melita are with the Department of Politics and Government at Illinois State University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.